Today, we've got Jordan Tollekson from Fast Threads in Minnesota. I like this because Jordan's out of a very small town. And we hear a lot about how sales growth in a small town is difficult, but he has completely surpassed that thought. And we get into how he's done it. He's got multiple offices and sales remote locations. He kicked off his first offsite. And we're getting into how he's changed his life as well from just totally grinding heads down into creating a lot more balance between family and work. So with that said, I'm excited to be able to share this episode with you guys. But first up, incredible partners always help us put this show on every single week. Easy Way kicking it off. If you go to easyway.com/giveaway, you got to do this. And you should do it every single month because they're giving away $250 in free giveaways. That's in product credit for Easy Way. So just head to easyway.com/giveaway, enter in your info and be entered so you can win some of this stuff. Easy Way is making reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with their systems, chemicals, and equipment. Thanks, Easy Way. Next up, Stalls. Use the code HUSTLER20. That's 20% off your next DTF transfer order. Stalls is helping shops take custom apparel to the next level. They've got incredible equipment, transfers, and support for your business to stay smart and stay ahead. They're also hosting a ton of really great conferences lately. So that's a really another thing to be able to attend and that Stalls has been hosting. So thank you, Stalls. Multicraft underscore daddy. You guys know the drill. You know the drill. Dave at Multicraft is sending out incredible gifts every single week. Go to his Instagram, Multicraft underscore daddy. Multicraft daddy is sharing unbelievable amount of screen printing history too. So a really cool follow. Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies have been around for over 50 years, providing the industry with top brands at competitive pricing. And honestly, it's a great business to be able to get help because they have top brands at competitive pricing. And not only that, they're able to help you and go physically into your business and really build a relationship there. So that's huge. Last but not least, GraphX Source. GraphX Source offers industry-leading outsourcing options for your shop by truly becoming a part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo and other shop management solutions. And when it comes to SEPs, mockups, creative art, order management, digitizing, and so on. There's no better to work with in our space. They've been at it for over 40 years as well. So use the code Printavo Pod 24. That's 50% off your first vector, SEP, or digitized order to give them a try. All right, let's jump on in.
I thought Mike 1 was it. It's definitely Mike 2.
This whole time?
Yeah.
Oh, Steven has like 3-4 studios.
I'm a traveling podcaster.
That's a flex if I've ever heard one.
It just means that I move around a lot.
I have a docket here, but I just wanted a quick pivot because I know Steven's been working on a lot of AI stuff. I was working on some random stuff the last few days. Yeah, I was curious, Jordan, are you doing any AI things in the business?
Yeah, we're doing... I use it every day, I guess, but then also... I did just recently, thanks to Steven, actually, I used Claude code and I made our first ever KPI app. And that was pretty sweet, man.
What do you mean? Like, what is it? Okay, what's it do? What was the goal when you started?
So, well, Fabric, one of my goals was to start tracking KPIs. Doing it manually was just too cumbersome. And it just seemed like we'd start it and stop it and start it and stop it. So, I got everyone iPads or tablets and built this app on Claude Code where basically they can punch in the information for the job, hit start, whether it's embroidery, DTF, screen print, and essentially it'll track, you know, for screen print, for example, it will track their setup times, it'll track their print time, and then it'll track their teardown time. And then bulk that information into different categories. So like different KPIs, obviously getting all those metrics back. And then we're going to end up using that to, I'm going to build my own scheduler within there as well. And then we can, I'm going to be able to pull the data from that to help us build the auto build our scheduler. So like it'll give us an estimated time then that it'll take us to complete a job once we kind of fill these different buckets of information.
That's pretty cool. And you've been doing this just by talking to Claude Code on the on your desktop?
Yeah, pretty much. Me and Whisperflow just talking away, man.
What's Whisperflow? Kevin talks about it, but he's old and he's got to do that stuff. But like, tell us about Whisperflow.
It's essentially, you just, instead of typing, you talk. So I think it's Control Alt and you speak, and instead of typing, and it's just so much faster. So I've gotten a lot of my office employees on it too, because it's just like, whether you're typing an email or if you are using AI, using Whisperflow on your desktop, it's just so much faster. So it's like, I mean, most people have ChatGPT on their phone and they probably use the icon to, the microphone icon to speak to it. And it's essentially the same thing as that.
That's Whisper Flow, but just Google it. It's easier and it'll pop up. It's pretty freaking amazing, like how well the dictation is to talk. I definitely find myself copying off old man Kevin just by talking to, not only on my phone all the time, but also, yeah, on the laptop, like just constantly, to a point where either headphones or maybe even like a little better back to the little wired thing to just keep talking to it easier.
Bruce, can you talk a little bit about Claude Cowork? Like there's a new title. There's a new sheriff in town and it's Claude Cowork, and you're all going to get the algorithms now. What's happening, Bruce?
What's crazy is that this AI stuff, as everybody knows, is moving like at an incredible pace. You know, we thought the whole DTF thing coming into the industry was a quick thing. Well, this is like next level. It used to be ChatGPT was the go-to, the de facto solution to ask questions and help with solutions and things. I'm not so sure anymore, to be honest. I rarely use it. I mainly ask Claude all my questions from my phone. And then when I'm trying to do things like work-wise and automation-wise, I'm using Claude Cowork and Claude Code. So when you download on your laptop Claude, it goes to, there's three tabs, chat, Cowork, and Code. And Cowork is this thing where you can give access to your Google, your Gmail, connect HubSpot, connect like all these different tools online you can connect to it. And then you can tell it the things that you want to be able to do and get really specific and create a scheduled task around it. I mean, a silly example is like, you know, I like to check in on how different fabric groups are going. And before I was copying a Gmail address in, copy and pasting a simple message, send it out. I was just like, hey, this is what I do. I want to tell you what group name it is. And I want you to queue up all the emails into my drafts inbox. And then I'll send them out one by one, just real quick. And small time savings, but really nice to be able to do that. Another thing is like cold email follow-ups. People we haven't talked to in X amount of time. Queue up emails, use the tone, look at my sent emails and use my same tone and how I talk with that, and queue up those emails and drafts as well. And we're going to do that every Tuesday morning at 2 a.m. schedule that task. And so there's a whole insane amount of automations when you think about, wait, I do the same thing like every few days that you can now be able to do with Claude.
Yeah. And what I'm even seeing is people are like installing them on like a desktop in their house, like a Mac Mini. Have you seen this? Because like it can access like local files now, and it can just like run in the background. And I think like I heard this thing the other day that said, if you don't feel behind in AI, you're doing something wrong, because it is literally like evolving super quick. But I think this next generation of AI now is all about automations and working in the background. And I think that's what the theme of like the next 4 or 5 months is going to be, is how does AI work when you're asleep? And how does AI just run things that were everyday tasks that you normally did?
Jordan, what's another, like, are you thinking about another type of task internally that you guys do that you're like, oh, maybe I can have this thing?
I got a really good one. And this is actually simple. But so we use automations.io. And so we have our live dashboard that shows all of our live sales data. And anyways, we use Inksoft stores, okay? And the way Inksoft and Printavo integrate, the dollar amount from those store sales does not come into Printavo. And so what we do is when those deposits come in through Inksoft, we share that information. We basically make a mock invoice to record that sales, the online store sales data, okay, if that makes sense. And anyways, you're going to have invoices that are paid in those merch deposits and merch store payments in those deposits. And so we actually started using Gemini to basically, you know, it screenshots the page and then it will quickly sort and tell us, okay, you had 50 merch store deposits at $10,000 and you had these four invoices paid for X amount of dollars. And so then it just makes that order entry like super fast. And that was just one simple task that we were just doing manually before, you know, just doing the manual calculations. And that's a simple one, but I mean, there's a lot of instances like that where we're using it to just speed up our day to day.
That is wild. Yeah. Do you think it can help you own purchasing as well?
We purchase from so many vendors. Just the nature of what we do, you know, mainly it's SNS and SanMar, right? Like most people, but then there's probably about 50 other vendors that we're purchasing from. And so actually, you know, the Printavo managed goods tab that they brought on a year or so ago has helped a lot just utilizing that, but we are still doing it manually for now. I think that there's absolutely a time and a place where you're probably going to be able to automate that with AI, but I don't think you can get access to all those sites that way. And I mean, I just don't know how you track it all either.
I want to show you guys something that we did recently. So we did a 20-day AI challenge in the whole company. And basically the challenge of the company was for 20 days, every single person is going to try and learn AI or something. And with Google Suite, you have Gemini basically in your Google account. So like we decided, hey, we're all going to use Gemini for a month. And the accounting department was going to do accounting things. The art department was going to do art things. And I wanted to figure out ways for the production team to do things. Because it's like, how do you think about production? Well, one thing led to another. And AI Visual Studio, which is Gemini's code builder, allows you to vibe code, which vibe code is creating an app. And I basically gave everyone the same prompt as, you know, to enter into Gemini and just say like, build me a tool to help track supplies like toilet paper, ink, consumables, all that good stuff. And there was a person in our dark room. I'm going to see if I can present this for a second. Can I actually, yeah, right here. I'm going to show you this. One of the guys in our dark room, he's worked for us for 7 or 8 years. He's pretty tech savvy, but like he's a printer, you know. He leaned into this, built a supply management tool for us to look at like different ink and supplies and all of these different things and where we order them from. And if we wanted to edit it, like who we buy it from, how much it is, how stock levels. And this was an employee that I never in my wildest dreams would have thought like this came out of them. And he just kept leaning into it and leaning into it and leaning into it. And last week I was like, do you want to run all purchasing of supplies here and use this tool and actually do this whole thing? And like promoted him. And it's like this new oxygen that's just been pumped into an employee. And now like he's back there getting everything. I was like, first we have to sort, we have to organize, we have to label, like we built out a whole plan of it. And that was just me challenging an employee, like challenging our team to think differently. Right. And so like, that's the challenge that you, like, I would give every one of your employees is like, how do you see what like things they don't even discover? And he was like, this is changing my life. This is crazy. Like he built a tool for his church and all this stuff. Like, so I don't know. And no, this app is not for sale. No, I'm not giving it to anyone else. Go do it yourself.
Just like, was this during the day? You said, hey guys, we're not doing regular work today.
No, it's once a day for 15 minutes at 9 a.m. And so my leadership team of five had to come out with 20 challenges. And every morning you get your challenge for the day. And you know, sometimes I go in left field and be like, turn yourself into a picture book for your kids so they can do coloring pages. Stupid, right? Or take a picture of a rack on the walls and ask AI how you would organize this better, right? So like we try to have fun with it. But if we could get, you know, 75 people or, you know, all trying to be like 1% better every day, these are the things that come out of it that you would never have expected. I was hoping my art team would use it more. And it's like, look, someone in our production facility like fell in love with it, right? Those are good inflection points.
No, that's exciting. That's really cool. It's crazy. I'm seeing on the Facebook groups too, so many shop owners are empowered to start building stuff like that. And, you know, like these little tools just to solve stuff specifically for their workflow. I mean, like you said, I think it is just, but it is helping people get over that initial hump, because it is a lot, there's a lot of buzzwords and there's a lot of promise about all this pie in the sky stuff. But until you, I think, start with a basic, hey, I just want to try to help me do this and save half the time doing that. That's where things start clicking.
Can I play the devil's advocate for a second? Jordan, like what you, some of the tools that you've talked about or the tools that I've talked about could be done in Notion or Monday.com or Asana, right? Or like a really elaborate Google Sheet. Is there something that like when you built it yourself, you just felt more inspired to install it and get people using it? Like, because it was Jordan's. There's like, why didn't you just try to do it in Monday, you know?
Well, we do use Monday as well, but absolutely, man. I mean, everyone, when I showed it to the staff, their jaws hit the floor. They were like, we didn't know you were that smart. And I'm like, I'm not that smart. It's actually really easy. And so I'm actually excited in our next quarterly I'm going to show them exactly how I did it, because I think it's something that people need to see of like how much power you have at your fingertips. To be able to do this stuff, and you do not need to be a computer expert by any means.
There's a real reason we want to bring you on, Jordan, because you talked about an offsite that you ran. So let's go back to the flesh. We'll end our tech talks. But you've gone through some awesome changes in your business. You've also gone through some like transformational life stuff, like you're a fitness nut now. You lost a bunch of weight, right? And so, where do we want to start? You want to talk offsite, Bruce? Like, where do you want to go with this?
Yeah. Well, you know, I know you brought that up as to wanting to run an offsite. Stevens, you've done quite a few. So I was curious of what you learned. What was the point of it? And maybe we can get into some lessons learned for folks of how to do it.
Yeah. So, one of the main reasons that we ran it is because we have three different locations. And embarrassingly enough, all of our employees actually hadn't met. And we don't have that large of a team. So we only have a team of about 20 people. And geographically, you know, we're only 70 miles apart is the furthest location from kind of here, the home base anyways. And not everybody had met. And so there's a lot of disconnect between, you know, sales and staff and office staff and art and production. And so I did our first quarterly meeting in January, and I brought everybody together for the morning session. And we learned a lot about each other and learned a lot about things that people are just like, you know, if I go and I tell an employee something somewhere else about something about production, it doesn't mean much coming from me. But when it comes from the screen printer or the embroiderer, it means a lot coming from them to everyone else. And so not only did we learn a lot about each other, it was just like a good team bonding, building experience, I guess, for everybody. And I don't know where else we were going with this.
Yeah. What did the day look like? So it was a half day?
No, we did a full day. So I had the whole staff there for the morning. And then I had the, just like our, I guess I would call it like our, not our core staff isn't the right way to say it, but like our upper level staff. So like our sales team, and mainly our office employees were kind of there for the second half of the day. And then that's where we kind of went through some more of the traditional EOS things, like setting our 90-day rocks and our 1-year goals and our 3-year outlook and all that kind of stuff. So we did that in the afternoon. So it was a long day. It was a whole day event. And, yeah, it was good. I'm really looking forward to the next one. And we had a lot of good feedback on it. I think it was well worth shutting down for a day for it. But I definitely learned, I'd say like one thing I took away, that's just at the top of my mind was that it's not something you want to bring every single employee to, because they're not all going to get enough out of it. And so like, there's certain people that are going to take it and run with it. And then there's certain people that it's just not going to jive with them.
Let's elaborate on that. So like, you plan this event, you're going to go somewhere else for the day, right? Because it's an offsite. Or did you guys do it in one of your facilities, or did you go somewhere else?
We went somewhere else.
And you might get the invite list, you might not. How was, like, so of the 20 employees, how many actually went to the offsite?
Well, everybody. So we had everybody there in the morning, and I mean, all of our full-time employees anyways. And we basically split off the production employees for the afternoon. And just because like some of those things weren't quite as relevant to them. But there's even, it just, you know, I think it really depends on like what position everybody's in. And in my mind, I was thinking like production, obviously some of these things don't quite make as much sense for them. Their goals are going to be more metric related. And some of these other things that we're talking about, but I guess just without being sort of vague about it, I guess it just, I think you just have to understand what type of people you need to have in that meeting. And making sure that you're using everyone's time wisely and that you're, having the correct people, I guess, as they say in US, the right people in the right seats.
Steven, is yours like that? Did you have,
no, we didn't. It's catered to, more of the professional staff. We still do something for the production team, that's like slightly different, more on just like team building kind of activities. But to your point, Jordan, like I run a quarterly traction meeting with, so I have like a core leadership team of there's five of us. And then we have a slightly larger leadership group of 13 or 14 that meet once a week. And then that group of 14 does a quarterly meeting. And then we try to do a company offsite, that hopefully touches everyone, where it's like, kind of like you said, Jordan, you kind of have like some people at something, some people at the other stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think you have to be smart with it. I don't think you can just put everyone in a room and say, our goal is to do $3 million. And the reclaim guy's like, I don't give a shit about your goals. Like, I want to reclaim screens, you know, and make money. So no, I think that's super, super interesting. How much planning went into it? Like, did you set an agenda? Did you have speakers come in? How do you creating a whole day of activities probably is tough. How did you actually plan the day?
Dude, I spent a lot of time, I'm not going to lie. And to be vulnerable and honest here, I was actually kind of nervous about it. Just because it's just like the first time I had everybody in one spot. And then I felt like the expectations were high. And so I spent a lot of time. I mean, I probably planned for a couple months. And I felt like I had it pretty buttoned up, but there's no doubt. I don't think you can prepare enough. You have to just kind of learn by doing in some of these instances. So I definitely learned a lot. And I, like I say, I'm stoked for the next one because I think we're just going to, it's just going to be that much better. And we, as we keep stacking them quarter after quarter, then I think not only is it going to be easier for me to prepare for, it's also going to be more effective.
Yeah. Jordan, what were like the different sessions throughout the day? Maybe walk us through what the day looked like team. Yeah. What were some of the things you guys, how did you break up the day?
Well, so we started the day with, basically I kind of had a slideshow, just kind of like a year in review. And so I put together as many statistics as I could, interesting things for people to see, talked about, kind of what we're kind of looking at coming into 2026, some of the things that we learned and accomplished in 2025. And then we moved into what I called a cross-department collaboration. And that was that time when the departments basically, they all took a piece of paper and they wrote down a couple things that, if this was true, my job would be so this much easier. And so they kind of, it was kind of like a little brainstorming on paper. And then we split people into groups and I had those groups specific, like trying to get people from different locations and people that wouldn't normally, be together and in different roles, right? And so then they spent a, they spent probably like an hour and a half talking about these different issues and like, you know, hey, if the ARP came to us this way, or if the work orders were complete, and if the dates were correct, or these, all these different things that would make maybe their jobs easier, in all kinds of different capacities. That was a long part of our morning session. And then, we had a little bit more, discussions together. We kind of talked as a company about what we want to see, our three and five year outlooks to look like. And then we kind of just had some appreciation for the production staff, as I don't think any production staff ever gets appreciated quite enough for what they do, and had lunch. And then we broke off to our afternoon, where then we kind of went through those, the 1 year, the, in the quarterly goals, and got all that stuff kind of buttoned up. And then just had a little bit of open discussion, but I was pretty adamant about not letting people riff on too much, because I didn't want us to get off topic and it to take forever. And I, my biggest concern was I didn't want the mood to turn into like a bitching session. I wanted it to be very structured. And, I think if I can give myself a pat on the back, I think I did a pretty good job of doing that and keeping people on track. Although honestly, it would have been nice to have a little bit of time to just let people really talk for a short amount of time, but I just worried about that, what that could do, in, you know, bringing the mood down in the room if somebody says the wrong thing.
What's interesting is, how did you define the 3 year part? Because I get stuck sometimes in just it being revenue driven. And to Steven's point, like, I don't think that resonates like as it flows down. Were there other aspects of what the business is supposed to look like, you feel like, in 3 years that people really gravitated to, like as a mission type thing?
I'm going to pull it up here real quick. Let's see. So yeah, we kind of like wrote down, everyone got to kind of point out different, ideas of what they would think our business would look like in 3 years. And this was actually kind of interesting because I think my outlook, I'm always shooting for the stars, I guess. So my outlook and their outlook was maybe a little bit different, but like some of the things that we had written down was, between 3 and 5 locations, everyone having an important and a specific role, a proud and cohesive team. So kind of talking about bringing these different companies together. And then, some people mentioned they'd like to see some of our production done at some of these other locations. They had things like, then we had things like numbers. So they had like a 10% growth year over year minimum. Looking at, they thought 21 to 22 employees, and I kind of let them just, I kind of stayed out of it, and I just let them come up with what they thought, because I thought that would be the most interesting thing to do, especially when we come back to it next year, to then see how much that changes. Cause I sit and think about it every day of what I think this company is going to look like tomorrow and 3 years and 5 years down the road. But to get what they thought, it was really interesting. And it also kind of made me realize too that, maybe I don't convey how maybe aggressive, like I'm hoping to be compared to what they're seeing or what they're thinking.
There's a lot of wisdom there. There's a really good book. It's a short read. It's written by the COO of 1-800-GOT-JUNK called Vivid Vision. And Bruce, have you read Vivid Vision? And it basically says exactly what you said, Jordan, is a lot of times the founder or the CEO doesn't or the business owner, the expectations they have for the business and their vision, if they were to ask all their employees to see if they could replicate, like everyone would say something different. And that's like the first step. That's like one of the first problems, is that not everyone really knows your vision. And so it's interesting when you ask them and you just kind of sit back. Did you actually then convey your vision? Like, I appreciate what everyone has said here. I do pay the bills. I want to tell you guys what I have in store and see how they align. Like, did you?
I didn't. I probably should have. I didn't, just because, I don't know, I was just really trying to keep myself out of it. And I really wanted to keep it to everyone else. And I really wanted to listen more than I talked, I guess. And I talked enough just with the presenting end of it. So I think that probably would have been a good idea. And I absolutely am going to do that in the next one. But I really was just hoping to just learn as much as I could, and let them kind of lead. And also then too, to see like who's really taking, you know, charge here and like, who's really kind of like aligned with the way that I'm thinking, and to see if there was anybody that was thinking that way without me. I didn't want to influence the way anybody was speaking.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
I was going to say the other thing I personally found helpful was half day work related stuff, half day bowling. I found bowling was like an easy group one, depending on the size. You can do small, if you're smaller, you can do baseball game or something like that. But that's kind of harder with, you know, it's just more folks and tickets and stuff. But the kind of camaraderie or like the inadvertent trust, I think, built from just hanging out outside of work related tasks was a nice value add too.
Jordan, do you guys do stuff for culture building, like events outside of work or anything like that?
Not enough. No, it's a hard dynamic with those. I think those locations being, you know, not all or not everybody being in the one location. So we don't do that enough. So I guess this was it, you know, for us, but I'd love to do more of it. It's just finding, I guess, the right times to the right time and in the right place.
I think everyone thinks that they have to go and rent out a bowling alley or go to a game or go laser tagging, but really, just Bruce, you do this a lot, is taking people out to meals and spending undivided attention with them. One of our sales team, I used to manage the sales team and I just can't anymore. I don't have the capacity to do it. They sort of run autonomously and it's kind of our legacy business. And I was just like, I haven't talked to you guys in a couple of weeks. You guys just want to go get dinner. And we went to like a restaurant, we grabbed dinner on a Monday night. And that 2 hours was more than I could have done in trying to squeeze myself into meetings, you know? And I think Bruce, you say the same thing, like taking people out for meals, like, hey, let's, you know, front office, let's just go grab lunch real quick. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. I think you can do them in small doses.
Mm-hmm. Jordan, how'd you end up with 3 facilities? What, like, or what is that?
Jordan, where are you in the world?
Well, I'm in Montevideo, Minnesota. So our headquarters, our main location, where our production facility is here. Montevideo is a town of about 6,000 people. And we bought a shop 4 years ago, and they're 15 miles straight west of us. In a town of just under 2,000 people. And then 2 years ago, we opened our third one in Watertown, South Dakota, which is 72 miles on the same highway straight west.
Why buy those? What was the, like, especially 72 miles away, I would just think I mean, I know, Steven, you're kind of far further distant away, but what was the, like, were you acquiring sales or equipment or... that was just growth of being in a different town geography wise.
Yeah. So the company that we bought out in Dawson, Minnesota is called Jim's Clothing, and they've been around for, actually we just had their 50th anniversary. And so it's been a business that, you know, kind of a classic, sporting goods, clothing store business that turned screen printing, embroidery. And we've heard a lot of those stories over the years of companies that kind of weathered that dot-com storm by pivoting to screen print embroidery from sporting goods. And they just had an excellent reputation. And so, at the time when we started, our company was actually, it was all our graphics, and we were doing primarily, motorsports stuff. So we were doing like race car graphics and racing shirts and stuff like that. And so I wanted to try to even out our, years. So like, it was very seasonal being in the motorsports industry. Like, our summers were super busy and then we were kind of dead in the winters. And, as we were growing, I knew that I needed employees, and this company that's not obviously super far down the road, they were doing a lot of the local, businesses and sport teams and stuff like that. And, the guy that owned it was getting up towards that retirement age. And so I approached him about buying it, and probably a year and a half later, we ended up making a deal, and it was kind of a buyout type of scenario where it actually, just this year was the first year that I took sole ownership of that company. And he stayed on for an extra year as a minority owner, just because things were going good and we were having fun and we were both learning a lot from each other. So that's kind of the quick story of that one. And then the one in Watertown, South Dakota, that town's like closer to 25 to 30,000 people. So for us, that's a big city, man. And we wanted to just grow and I don't want to say that we like have the market in our area, or I'm not claiming that by any means, but just geographically and population wise, like there's only so much you can do in an area this size. So like, just for reference for you guys, the Watertown is going to be the biggest city within 70 miles, I believe. I don't think there's anything else over that size. If there is, they're really close to that 20,000 mark. So that's kind of how rural we are out here. And because of the nature of the work that we do, our production facility is, you know, capable of doing a lot of work. And so we wanted to put our butts in those areas and have a presence in those towns. And basically what those locations are simply sales offices, basically. And then they have some small retail as well.
So like showrooms. So we're talking, you know, like when you decided to do this 70 miles away, was it like, okay, I'm going to rent a storefront, put one employee in there? Did you like build out a whole team over there? It's like a land and expand kind of model, which is super smart, especially in rural. How was that? Like, how much of an investment was that? And how'd you figure that out?
Yeah. So I had a gal working here for me. My wife is originally from Watertown, and I actually lived there for a little bit after college, or during college, I guess. And so we always knew that was somewhere where we wanted to go. And I had a gal that was working for me at the time that, she needed a life change and she needed to move. And she was an excellent employee. She's very knowledgeable. And she was somebody one of those people you don't want to lose. Right. And so I said, well, where do you want to go? And I said, how about Watertown? You know, let's open a store. You go there and manage it. And we'll kind of just wing it. It can't be that hard. Right. And, so we kind of threw her in there and she operated that place all by herself for the first year. And she did excellent. I mean, truly amazing. She proved that proof of concept. And so that was kind of our first year. It was like, let's make sure that like there's a need for this, which we felt there was. We felt there was a need for our type of business in that community. So let's make sure there's a need for it. Let's make sure that it's something that's viable before we kind of really invest in hiring more people over there. And it was pretty clear early on that that was going to be a good move for us. And so in June of last year, I hired our first salesperson for over there. So she's kind of the account manager, store manager. And then I hired is actually my old football coach and middle school teacher, which is a really full circle, pretty special moment for me. And he's absolutely killing it. He's doing an amazing job. He's just built for it.
So there's two people in that, just two people in the, but you get the like searchability of it. You're there physically. People come in or pick up.
Yeah. It's like an outpost a little bit. Since you've made that investment, which sounds like, you know, renting a storefront, merchandising it, figuring that out, plus an employee, probably a pretty significant investment and a gamble to make. How, if you were to look at that book of business right there, and if you would say, like, if you could say, like, how much has that turned into, like, by focusing on sales, by settling in a new place, what does that look like now?
Well, I'll say that last year we were break even, which I think is amazing for the second year. And so, yeah, as far as an investment goes, you know, it was probably like $100,000 to $150,000 like investment, I guess. We started getting sales. And so, I mean, the first year was it was expensive. There's no doubt about it. Right. I mean, all the costs that go into building out a store and doing it professionally and just setting it up right. Like it was expensive. But like I say, last year, in 2025, it broke even. And this year it'll definitely be, it'll be quite profitable.
Are we talking like 300 grand the first year, 500, 100 grand? Like give us some range so that people can wonder with us here. Shops that are listening to in this want to make an investment in sales or thinking about something like this, which is very sales forward. What were your expectations going into it and what came out of it in that first year? I'm going to just be nosy now.
Yeah. Well, like I told you, I mean, I shoot for the stars, but the first year, it one person there, she did $213,000 in sales. And last year they more than doubled that. This year we're hoping to double again.
That's pretty incredible. That's like, just, I just want to take a second and give you recognition for like, that's very growth minded, not production focused. Like, it's, yeah, that's pretty, pretty awesome. Congrats, dude.
Yeah. Thank you. You know, it's kind of the one cool thing about having these locations where they're just sales is that you can really focus on sales. And so I'm here at the production facility most of the time, and we're really focused on the production. And it's a distraction, right? I mean, production is a distraction to your sales team and to your front office. So having those location or having those people desegregated from it, they can just really focus on taking care of their customers and building relationships and not have to worry about coming and helping and bagging some orders or, you know, printing that last shirt at 9 o'clock at night or whatever it might be.
You know, it's so funny. I don't have an office here anymore. I sit in our like boardroom basically, but I've been spending a lot more time in Champaign, and I was literally weeding vinyl. Like, I was literally picking vinyl and cutting stuff today, and I'm like, why am I? It's fun. But like, to your point, when you're not there, like, yeah, production is totally a distraction, and having something that's totally sales focused, like that's all they can really do. You know, there's a lot of wisdom there, I think.
Do you think you can replicate this, Jordan? Like, if you had, it sounds like the lady that you had, you know, very kind of forward thinking. If you have that person in another spot, say another 70 miles the opposite direction, could it be replicated?
I'll tell you what, I absolutely think it can be, but there's one thing that it comes down to, and that's having the right people.
You built it around her. Totally.
Well, I mean, both of those guys, I mean, they're fantastic, but those locations or those, they're nothing without the right people. So they care and they own it over there. Like, it's their baby and they treat it like I would treat it. And if you can't, you know, people like that just don't come around every day, plain and simple. I mean, we all know it. We've all had a different employees, and that is absolutely the key to, I mean, I think it's true no matter what, but it's really important when you don't have your thumb on them every day, right? So they got to be people that can self-manage and are going to care about the outcomes, and they absolutely do.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's very similar to the Uber founding story when they were growing really quickly. What they would do is they had a playbook and they documented all that stuff for getting started in a new city. And then they hired a general manager and they put that person in the new city with the rule book and said, go, you know, take this. Here's the plan. Here's the sales quota you need to hit for this to break even in X time and go from there. Here's how we've done it in other cities. And it's really cool to see something that, you know, you're doing at your scale.
No, Jordan, I was going to say, like, you have three locations, you have a family, right? You've been on a pretty incredible fitness journey. How have you operated? Like, it seems like there's like a version of you that is in some flow state. Can you talk to us about that a little bit? Maybe get personal for a second and like, yeah, what? How do you operate your life a little bit, and how does that influence your business?
Have you guys ever heard of the four burner theory?
Yes.
No. Really?
Justin Lawrence just sent it to me 2 weeks ago. Explain you it. Go, Jordan.
Yeah. So the four burner theory, it's the idea that you have four burners, and it's family, work, health, and friends. And to be successful, you need to turn one of those off, and to be extremely successful, you need to turn two of them off, right? And I guess once I saw that video, it was by I saw it on TikTok, and actually it was the gal that the Main Street Millionaire gal.
What's her name? Cody Sanchez?
Sanchez. Yeah, she's amazing. Anyways.
Not Dave Ramsey?
No, Bruce.
Dave Ramsey's got lots of wisdom too, right? But this one was Cody. And anyways, the way I thought of it is I've kind of had my health burner turned off for the last 10 years. So I started this business. I was in college. It was 2014. And it was very much a grind through many of those years of just learning a lot of things the hard way. And I never thought that I was the smartest person. I never thought that I was the best at anything, but I always felt like I can outwork anybody. And so I did. I mean, I just worked 16, 20 hours a day, 7 days a week for many, many years. And I definitely turned the health burner off. And I gained a lot of weight and I started coming into some health problems at a young age. I'm only 32 years old, you know, high blood pressure, cholesterol, liver, all this stuff. And so it's actually about 2 years ago, pretty much to the date, 2 years ago, I decided, I'm like, you know, I got two kids. I now have a third due here in 2 weeks. And money and success and business is no good if you're not here to enjoy it with your family. And so I definitely had to dim down some of those other burners to ignite that health one. And I went all in, and in a year's time, I lost 100 pounds and kind of got all my stuff and all my ducks in a row. And now I've just kind of been maintaining for the last year or so, and just getting to the gym every day and just kind of making that part of my lifestyle. But being able to now kind of turn that burner to medium instead of on high has let me kind of get back into the business and also try to focus on my family. And so like, those are the two that I'm most focused on right now, is business and family. And then, my health one is definitely on medium. I'm at the gym five days a week. I make as much time for my friends as I can, but
how did you physically do it? Like, how did you, like, was it, okay, I just have to leave here by 4 o'clock, and you stuck to that? Because the work side is pretty addicting.
Yeah, no. So I've always been a night owl. Like, I like staying up late, work until 3-4 o'clock in the morning, getting up at 8, showing up a little late.
You and Steven show up. have a lot of commonalities with the late night.
I'm way better. Way better. Keep going. Sorry, Jordan.
No, you're good, man. So I had to reframe my mind. And I actually read that Mel Robbins book, The 5-Second Rule. And I kind of bought into it, I guess. And I was just like, hey, I'm going to get my ass up in the morning. I'm going to wake. My set alarm's going to be at 5. I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to get after it. But to be honest with you, the first 6 months, and this was a mistake that I did make, is I didn't go to the gym right away. I mean, I was walking and shooting for that like 10,000, 15,000 steps a day thing, but I wasn't lifting weights. And I lost the majority of my weight in 6 months simply just by tracking calories, my MyFitnessPal app. And losing all that weight that fast, it definitely took a toll on my strength. And so then I got back in the gym after about 6 or 8 months of on that journey and kind of got myself back up to, you know, probably high school levels again or whatever. And so it took me a while to do that. But yeah, that's kind of how I did it, I guess.
That's
amazing.
I saw Sahil Bloom. Is that his name, Bruce? Sahil, he had a quote on his Instagram the other day. It's like, haven't met a loser at life that wakes up and goes to the gym at 5 a.m. It's like, damn. Jordan, congrats to everything you've done. And yeah, it's super inspirational. Cool to see y'all. Like, it's like we're coworkers because you're doing the same thing somewhere else. We're all hacking on the same problems, get to share it together. You're at Long Beach, yeah. Fabric. This is cool, man. This is super awesome. Super inspiring.
Yeah, it's weird to be on the other end of this, guys. I told Bruce at Print Hustlers, I said, you know, I've been watching you guys and watching this podcast for as long as I can remember. And the amount of things that I learned from you guys, I attribute a lot of the success I've had to that. I mean, just the all the inspirational people that you guys have talked to, all the different nuggets that you guys put out. Obviously also being a part of Fabric and going to those Print Hustlers conferences and stuff like that. I've learned so much. So I thank you guys for all that. And I have a lot of appreciation for both of you. And I've been on a couple calls with you, Steven. And you know, you've helped me work through some things and that you had no obligation to do. So I'm appreciative of that.
Yeah, Justin Lauren said it best. We're all coworkers, right? Like, we're the only ones that really understand what it means. And so when we can just talk and complain about everything else, like, we all level up. And I think, you know, to those listening in the industry, like, you're not alone. There's amazing resources. And it's like, I know so many people that came to their first Print Hustlers or came to their first Long Beach and instantly are just like, oh my gosh, there's this huge community here. So super cool. What airlines do you fly, Jordan?
I'm a Delta man.
Yeah, there was a,
but we do.
There was a wrong answer. There was a wrong answer and a right answer, and you gave a pretty solid answer. So we'll invite you back.
Fair enough.
Jordan, thanks for being able to join us on the pod. What if folks want to ping you to ask any questions? What could it be, email, or what do you think?
Yeah, Jordan@fastthreads.com. Two T's in there. Hit me up anytime. If you're obviously a member of Fabric, you've probably seen me on the chats and stuff like that. So
amazing. Thank you, Jordan. Print Hustlers, thank you guys as always for joining on another week's episode of the Print Hustlers podcast. Have an amazing one. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.